Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Today, we're discussing a growing concern in the food industry, microplastics. As the name suggests, they're tiny pieces of plastic, less than 5 millimetres in length. They come from a variety of sources, and the more research is done, the more it seems they're making their way into every corner of the globe, our oceans, farmland, and woodlands. And they're not only polluting the environment, they're also finding their way into our food. One study estimates that the average person consumes roughly 5 grams of plastic a week. That's roughly the weight of a credit card. So how worried should we be about eating something that we get no essential nutrients from? After all, isn't that just what fibre is? And for the planet's health and our own, how on earth do we go about eradicating something so tiny, yet so omnipresent? Here with us to discuss this are James Lofty, a PhD research student at the Hydro Environmental Research Centre at Cardiff University School of Engineering. Hello there, James.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you with us. We've also got Professor Jeanette Rochell, Associate Dean at the Department of Biological and Marine Sciences at the University of Hull. Hello there, Jeanette.
Hello, Stefan.
Very, very good to have you. Now, let's first of all set the scene and define exactly what we're talking about, Jeanette. How do you define microplastics and where are they likely to come from?
Yes, as you've already mentioned, they're small pieces of plastic, and the larger pieces have essentially come from bigger pieces of plastic that have slowly broken down. The larger end of the scale would be about the size of a sesame seed, perhaps, so you could see that. The smaller end of the scale is in the sort of nano range, which you wouldn't be able to see, and you would actually need a microscope to be able to see them. They're so small. They come in different shapes and, as I said, different sizes and also different polymer types, depending on what plastics they've broken down from.
And the word plastic is actually an adjective, isn't it? It's sort of talking about plasticity. Plasticity. You're better at saying that than me anyway. But are we really focusing in on, as you say, sort of polymers from oil-based sources?
Yes, there's the oil-based sources, and there are other different types of polymers, lots and lots of different various types. We've mostly sort of focused on things like those that have come from plastic bottles, like polyethylene terephthalate or plastic bags, also food packaging, but then there's also textiles, rubbers, all sorts of different types of plastic sources.
Yeah. And so as a car is driving along the road, as well as the tyres giving fantastic grip, they are being slowly ground down. So you get tiny little fragments of them as much as anything else.
That's correct. Yeah, there's lots of different sources, but that's been identified as one. Another recent one has been cigarette butts, actually, as well.
And they're kind of everywhere. OK, so what's the problem with them? I mean, why are microplastics bad? I mean, are they bad? Are plastics bad?
So we're finding microplastics now pretty much everywhere where we look. So whether that's in the environment, in the air that we breathe, and that's outdoor and indoor inside your homes, whether it's in the soil or the aquatic environment, so lakes and the open ocean. But we're also finding microplastics in organisms, so lots of marine organisms to begin with. And as people look into other organisms and plants as well, and most recently from our own research, we're finding them inside humans. So we've now found them in the last 6 months or so inside lungs, in fact, the deepest part of the lungs as well. And also recently in vein tissue from people that have been undergoing an operation. So they're present, they're taken up into the body of different organisms. But whether they're bad or not is not really a question that we can fully answer, although we could talk a little bit about cell studies perhaps and how they affect cells. But we can't at the moment. The evidence isn't there to say that they're bad. And also we should remember that plastics do actually have important good uses as well to balance this out.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so much. But we're basically talking about a man-made creation, something that has been constructed from hydrocarbons or something like that.
Yes. So one of the issues about plastics, which potentially should worry us perhaps, is around their durability. So they're designed not to break down. And that means that if they are in the body, whether they're inside your lung or trapped inside vein tissue or in your blood, for example, They're not going to be broken down. Potentially they're there for a lifetime. And at the moment, we just don't know how long they might persist. Decades, hundreds of years, perhaps. Whereas natural polymers like cotton, they're going to degrade and break down. So less of a worry.
Yeah. Okay, James, now how pervasive is the problem right now? And how does this compare to, say, 10 or 20 years ago? I mean, this is an industrial world issue, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, so the body of knowledge around kind of microplastics only started around 20 years ago. So we're still trying to quantify how bad the situation really is. But yeah, so recent research has found that microplastics have been found at the top of Everest, to the bottom of the Mariana Trench. They've been found in various everyday products like salt and beer and even drinking water. So they're really entering our food chain every day. And yeah, as Jeanette said, they're in human bodies, they're in the blood system, the lung tissue, and even the placenta they've been found. But we really don't really understand how serious the situation really is, whether they're kind of inert in the environment, are they just passing through the environment? And same with humans, are they just passing through the humans, or are they actually accumulating and leaching toxic chemicals, which we know are harmful for humans? But yeah, the research isn't there to really make a conclusion to say if they're necessarily bad or not.
It's one of those interesting concepts, isn't it? It's like radiation. We all think of radiation as this terrible, dangerous thing, and yet we sit here with radiation passing through us right this very second. And it's about scale. It's about trying to assess the difference. Jeanette, do you get people when you talk about what you do? Do they just assume that microplastics are bad, and you have to sort of say, well, we're not quite sure about that?
There is that assumption. As James has said, though, while we don't have the evidence to understand what the long-term implications of these might be, either in organisms, in the environment, or in ourselves, what we do know is that there have been experiments in a lab environment, if you like, in a Petri dish, where they've used human cells or human tissues and exposed them to these kind of microplastics. And in that lab cell environment, what you do find is that certain types of microplastics, it's actually their shape, cause detrimental effects, harmful effects, if you like, on those cells. And that's seen as an inflammation response and also a stress type response. So we know in an artificial environment, in the lab, in a Petri dish, that these microplastics can cause harmful effects. Now, what we need to do next is to take the information from the environment, the levels perhaps that we detect in food and drinking water, and to conduct those type of experiments again, but this time within sort of relevant microplastics, the ones that we do find in the diet, the ones that we do find in people's bodies or organisms' bodies, rather than what's tended to be used so far in these experiments, which are plastic straight from a manufacturer. We call them virgin microplastics, so more environmentally relevant plastics, really.
Yeah.
And at that point, we'll move the research field on a little bit further and have a little bit more relevant information as to whether they're harmful or not.
Now, normally when we have these interviews, the academics wait until the end of the interview to start calling for more research. But we're three questions in and you're doing it. So clearly we're sort of at the beginning of our understanding of microplastics. Would that be correct to say?
Very much so, yes. And the work that we were doing in the human lung was literally last year. The work on the vein was published literally a month ago. The work in blood that colleagues in the Netherlands published was literally last summer as well. So we're really right at the beginning of a new research field. But in saying that, what typically happens from a scientist's point of view is we have some sort of chemical or product, and you look for whether there's any sort of negative toxic impact. And then eventually, after a while, the body of evidence is growing. And then with that body of evidence, you can give it to the policymakers who then decide whether you need
to. You then ignore it and do what they were going to do anyway.
Yeah, and that's the perennial frustration as an environmental toxicologist, of course. You use the data and you pass it along and hope that there might be some sort of change.
Yeah, and at some point, the body of evidence is weighty enough. So James, I mean, microplastics are even found in our soil too, is that right?
Yeah, so the majority of research on microplastics has been really focused on our oceans. That's where kind of the body of knowledge came from. They are very prevalent in our soils. At Cardiff and Manchester University recently, we published a piece of research that found that European agricultural soils may have similar concentrations of microplastics to what we find in our oceans. So from that study, we found around 40,000 tons of microplastics is spread onto European farmlands every year. And this was probably an underestimate. And the culprit of this land pollution is mostly from sewage sludge fertilizers, which have been diverted from wastewater treatment plants. And these sludges are commonly spread on farmland throughout Europe as a renewable source of fertilizer due to the high levels of nitrogen and phosphate they provide to the soil, but also because of directives from the EU that promote a circular waste economy. The problem is that these sewage sludges are loaded with microplastics. We found in our study that per gram of sewage sludge contained 24 pieces of microplastics, and per 1% of the weight of the sewage sludge was made up of plastics. So considering how much is spread across farmlands throughout Europe, that's a lot of plastic being spread onto agricultural land.
And any indication of where those come from?
Yeah, so the sewage sludge is created by the partition of wastewater. So from domestic wastewaters, from households, from industry, from road runoff, all gets collected in a wastewater treatment plant. And those wastewaters are separated into sludge, in all the sediments, all the fine particles are collected in these wastewater treatment plants, and then that is treated and then sent out as a fertilizer because of a sustainable practice of circular waste, using this sewage sludge as a fertilizer. The problem is it is contained with lots of microplastics and lots of other harmful chemicals that are being spread straight back onto our land.
Yeah, and the land is obviously the soil in which we grow a lot of our food. And so therefore the question really is how much of those microplastics can be sort of ingested into a plant as it's growing?
Well, yeah, so the impact that microplastics have on soil and the food that we eat is there's a range of impacts, including actually altering the soil's structure, so reducing the pore space in the soil, which has an effect on the soil's water holding capacity. And this affects soil fertility and therefore crop growth and performance. The microplastics in the soil may also leach toxic chemicals throughout the soil through the process of degradation. And then there's the impact microplastics have on the soil ecosystem, and where microplastics can be ingested by organisms such as worms and really affect their growth and survival. And these microorganism communities are essential for nitrogen and carbon cycles, which crop plants need for survival as well. So, you know, there's lots of impacts that may have on the soil, but again, this is not well understood. Yeah. More research needs to be done, especially with environmental.
You're both at it now, aren't you?
But with environmental conditions, so how many microplastics we see in soils across Europe, and then testing what that effect is on the microorganism communities. And then the next step is that is what the effect is on, you know, monoculture crops and food that we eat. And it's not just the crops for humans. These crops also provide feed for livestock. So it's also it's a whole food security issue that potentially may happen in the next couple of years.
And I don't want to be too obtuse, but is any benefits to having microplastics in the soil?
Not that I can think of, no.
I'll wind my neck in on that one. Okay. So Jeanette, now we talked about the amount of research that's unfolding, you know, in real time, I guess. What work is being done on the long-term impacts of this on human health? Are there some interesting studies that are at work at the moment? Is it, you know, is your hunch that it's a ticking time bomb and there's all sorts of problems about to unfold?
There's the classic cell study approach that you can use to try to understand what's happening. I'm sure that the medics are also busy looking at inflammation type diseases, perhaps, to see if they can correlate that with microplastics in the diet. There've been a lot of studies, for example, around how many microplastics you find in seafood, also in drinking water. So for example, we know that if you're using drinking water from a plastic bottled source, there are more likely to be higher levels of microplastics in that plastic bottled source of drinking water than perhaps in ordinary drinking water or out of a glass bottle.
Yeah.
So I could see a situation where you would perhaps have the medics, epidemiologists, and the colleagues looking at the microplastics, designing studies to try to pull all of that together and answer some of these questions.
Now, I know that if I said, have you got a hunch about this, that you just throw it back in my face. So, no, I'm a scientist. I don't have hunches. So I'll ask it in a slightly different way. Do you avoid drinking drinks from plastic bottles and prefer glass, or is that not yet an issue?
Yes, as an environmental toxicologist, I avoid lots of different potential contaminants. So with the microplastics, I must admit I eat less shellfish, because we've shown that there are higher levels of microplastic in shellfish relative to other fish. But of course, they're like giant sponges.
They'll have anything.
Yes. So that's one change. But also, I now make sure I use glass dishes for microwaving my food. I try to avoid plastic bottles. I mean, there are issues with other types of packaging as well. Yeah. I also try, if I can, to have textiles in my home that are from natural polymers rather than synthetic polymers, but that's a sort of, you know, a cost issue for quite a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm going to take that as a hunch. You've got a hunch, haven't you?
Yeah, there are things you can do. But in saying that, you know, if I think about metals, I probably wouldn't eat mussels or shellfish for the same reason, that they also mop up other contaminants as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's look at potential ways of tackling this. James, how effective can filtering be? I mean, we're talking about tiny, tiny particles here. And whether it's in drinking water or in soil, are we able to filter microplastics out so they don't end up in our food and in our bodies?
Well, we can filter microplastics from water and soil. But because, as you said, the particles are so small, it's a very labor-intensive, expensive process. It requires a lot of machinery and policy change. And this kind of means that the environmental release of microplastics is almost an irreversible process. We can, however, reduce the amount of plastics that are put onto our agricultural land and into our waters by maybe reducing the amount of sewage sludge fertilizer that's applied to our farmlands. As we know, that's a big source of microplastics.
It seems such a shame, doesn't it? It's like we've come such a long way and now, no!
I know. It's a relatively sustainable process. It's a circular process. It moves away from fossil fuel fertilizers. So it's really kind of weighing up the pros and cons between having a circular process or a fertilizer that is loaded with microplastics.
And is this a fundamental problem with environmental science, that there are so many different factors that picking the correct sort of path of action is very difficult?
Yes. Yeah. I think that is, some people jump the gun as well of providing an answer without doing all the science before implementing that action.
Examples of that?
Well, this kind of sewage sludge answer to a circular waste problem was, let's really promote this application of these circular sewage sludge fertilizers onto our land, EU directives, without actually looking at the science and saying, what's actually in these sewage sludge fertilizers? What's actually being put onto our land where our food is grown? The science wasn't out there, but now we're slowly finding out what's actually in these fertilizers, what we're putting onto our land, what's actually running off our land as well into our rivers, what's running off therefore into our oceans. You know, it's a whole environmental case.
Absolutely. And let's look at food in particular. I mean, I guess we're saying there is plastic in our food, there are microplastics in our food, but then a lot of things are allowed in our food. You know, there are 75 insect fragments per 50 grams of flour. Now, that's a plastic as well. That's a natural plastic. So again, back to this idea of a hunch, is plastic or microplastics particularly bad?
Well, that's the issue. We don't No, microplastics have been found in, as we said, salt and beer and drinking water. There's lots of studies around that. But it's up to kind of the toxicologists to really make a decision whether these microplastics are bad or not, and doing them in a environment where you have an environmental concentration. So how much a human is exposed to microplastics every year. It's a very, quite a hard study to do with humans and different organisms.
Nutritional studies generally anyway are very hard to do, I guess.
Exactly. So it's going to take quite a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jeanette, you mentioned a few sort of things that you do in order to avoid the potential problems that might crop up if they do. And there's no harm in protecting yourself against these things, even if based on a hunch at the moment. Are there any other ways that you think consumers can protect themselves from potential harmful effects of microplastics in food and drink, in addition to the things you've mentioned?
Well, apart from the food choices and using different packaging materials, perhaps in your microwave, but I did want to add right at the beginning, you mentioned one source that said that we consume approximately a credit card size worth of microplastics in our diet. I think it was in a week or a month, but that's recently been looked at by the scientific community. I think they were saying over a lifetime it might be the equivalent of a plastic chair. And I think the scientific community have since come back and said, actually, that's a way, way over.
Yeah, but it works for the media. We're the media. We like things to be really simple and credit card sized. If it's not a credit card, it's got to be the size of a football pitch. Come on. Work with us here.
Yes, and also you must also remember as well that what goes in, some of it comes out too. It's not actually all retained in the body either. So you have to get some perspective here, I think.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Okay, so James, is enough being done at a governmental level to reduce the creation or the use of microplastics? I mean, seeing as we don't quite know about the implications of it, I suppose it's difficult for large decisions to be made.
Yeah, that's correct. So I know that recently European Commission have reached a final draft for regulations that restrict intentionally added microplastics to products that may result in environmental release from cosmetics, cleaning products, and pesticides.
Is that where we would normally find microplastics intentionally being put into products then, that mainly in those industries?
Yeah, so we find microplastics in cleaning products, and so these are virgin plastics that have been put into these products for a purpose, for rubbing and
toothpaste. I mean, the kind of scrubbing tools in toothpaste, is that a microplastic?
I think there may be microplastics in toothpaste, but that may have been restricted already due to other regulations.
Yeah,
but yeah, these regulations don't cover microplastics that are in fertilizer or food or drinking water. They're looking at the intentional release of microplastics.
Gotcha. Yeah. And what about the microplastics that are already in the environment? Are we just stuck with those and we just need to kind of deal with it? We've got this far. You're not going to do anything about it. We're not going to filter, every ton of soil.
Yeah. I think sadly we are. Clean up operations for microplastics and plastics in general are very expensive processes, labor intensive.
Yeah.
So yeah, sadly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we've done lots of sadly and lots of being slightly worried. How about some hope? What about some optimism about what might unfold? And at this point, you can throw back in the we call for more research. There ought to be some positivity here as well. Jeanette, what do you think? You're looking like you're not.
I'm struggling to think of the positives. There's certainly a lot more research, as you said, to do around the impacts in organisms, whether it's in the sea, in the ocean, or whether it's in humans via exposure via our diet, but also inhalation as well. It's difficult to see the positives until we know the answers.
Yeah.
Would be my reply to that. I hate to be doom and gloom, but it's a case of the unknown, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's not just doom and gloom. That's being practical as well, and saying we're on the journey to understand this, which I completely understand. And James, what about you? What do you think? I mean, I guess reducing the amount of plastics that we use, which is a pretty clear imperative already, should help.
Yeah, what I can say to that is upstream methods, eliminating plastics from unnecessary processes such as single-use plastics, packaging, plastic bags, but also what we can do in terms of monetary value, invest in circular production, circular waste industries, divest in companies that are massive waste producers. To me, these are the most effective ways to reduce microplastics entering our environment, entering our food systems, is really looking upstream, looking at where the plastics actually come from. How can we stop it at source rather than kind of looking at the consumer and being like, oh, we need to stop buying plastic covered products or produce. Let's look upstream. Let's look at big companies and looking at how we can do this more circular. How can we not waste plastics, basically?
Absolutely. Well, I think you've both given us a huge amount to think about, and I get the idea that we're going to be talking to you a lot over the coming years about what we discover. So, James Lofty and Professor Jeanette Rochell, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stefan.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Now, I'd like to tell you about a series of events that we've got coming up. Food Matters Live Inspiring Nutrition is taking place on the 23rd and 24th of May. The events will explore the latest innovative solutions advancing sustainable nutrition. You can become a partner or apply to attend by searching Food Matters Live Inspiring Nutrition. Or email us at info@foodmatterslive.com. And thank you so much for listening.